I feel that my work was betrayed.
Who have all the fury which Didier Drogba is directing at the referee now.
There obviously seem to be a palpable discord between manager and players.
Hello and welcome back to Palpable Discord, the Chelsea podcast. We have a special episode today. We are joined by The Athletic's Liam Toomey, who follows Chelsea and has done for many years. One of the most clued in journalists on Chelsea in the UK right now. Welcome, Liam.
Thanks, guys. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so we're really delighted to get you on, Liam, to discuss a number of things around the club as we finish another international break. Liam obviously is at The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter at Liam_Toomey. And you can also hear his views on a weekly basis on Straight Outta Cobham, another really good Chelsea podcast. Today with me and Will, we are going to talk about a number of things. But the first thing we really wanted to get you on, and I think it's something which is a bit of a lightning rod topic for Chelsea over the last 18 months since Frank Lampard took over, is just how well he's doing. And the view seems to vary whether you're a fan, whether you're a member of the media, depending on whether you're an ex-player or just an impartial journalist like yourself, Liam, like myself. Just really, what's your instinct on Lampard's job so far? Is it overrated, underrated, just right? Do you feel like he's being treated fairly? And how do you assess the opinion on him so far?
Yeah, I think the first thing to say is he's probably done two different jobs. Last season was a unique set of circumstances with the transfer ban, with Eden Hazard leaving and not being able to, or at least having the ability to strengthen from the outside, significantly limited. And those circumstances, I think, complicated Lampard's job in some ways, but they also shielded him from criticism and from expectation in other ways. I think overall, he achieved par for the course last year in terms of finishing in the top four. The way he did it, I think, deserved extra credit, because although Chelsea's eventual points tally, 66 points, was, I think, you know, pretty low in the historic setting for a fourth place finish, he did it by empowering and establishing a load of academy boys, which is something that Chelsea have been crying out for. And particularly where, in the state the squad was in, it was the sensible thing to do as well. And Chelsea will reap the benefits of having Mason Mount, Reece James, Tammy Abraham, Callum Hudson-Odoi, Fikayo Tomori in the squad for years to come. And Lampard deserves the primary credit for that, I think. This year is a totally different job. You know, Chelsea were the biggest spenders in the summer. A spectacular spent recruitment drive, really, in which they got most of their top targets, including players that, like Havertz and Werner, that most elite clubs in Europe would have taken in a normal window. So now this is much closer to what we'd expect to be the real Chelsea job, with all the expectations and the pressures that come with that. And I think they've only lost once. They've had a few hiccups. They've been a little bit inconsistent in the opening weeks, but I think most teams have, given the nature of pre-season and all the strange circumstances around this particular year. But they're in a good place. And so I think overall, so far, Lampard has been pretty on target, I'd say. I'd say he's pretty fairly rated in terms of the job he's done so far. But he deserves particular credit for certain things. And chief among them is the establishing and the empowering of this academy group.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Liam. I think it's an interesting case on in how you sort of split his job down the middle, and it is two jobs separated by the end of last season. In terms of Lampard, whether he's judged fairly or not, something I'm quite interested to hear your take on is whether certain members of the media who were friendly with Frank as during their playing careers, whether you think that he perhaps gets an easy ride. I mean, it's not strictly isolated to Lampard himself. I think we've seen it with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at Manchester United, obviously some of his former teammates in the media. Do you feel there's a reluctance to criticise him at times? I mean, he has, in the last month, certainly turned it round, both in terms of results and performances, both defensively, and now we're seeing some really intriguing patterns of play moving forward, which is very promising when you consider the time spent with this group and the numerous options and the undoubted growth you'll see the longer this group stays together from an attacking perspective. So, yeah, how do you assess the potential for him to be criticised and whether he is treated fairly in this regard, or do you see him having maybe a bit more rope than previous Chelsea managers such as Sarri, maybe such as Conte too?
Well, I think that's true, that he's probably had favourable coverage in certain parts of the media. Everyone who's been in English football for as long as Frank Lampard has been in it and at the top of it has relationships with certain journalists that they've built up over time that probably help. And I think Lampard's general media strategy has helped him in that he's always been very good at controlling his public image and the way he comes across. He's a very smart guy. He talks very diplomatically most of the time. It's very rare to see him put his foot in it on any particular topic, which I think is one reason why Chelsea quite like having him as the public face of the club at this point, particularly after Maurizio Sarri. And I think it's also something that journalists appreciate, because he'll generally give you an answer, a paragraph. He tries to be cordial with journalists. I haven't seen him really snap at anyone. And I think that goes some way to buying you some goodwill. But I think it's also important that we make clear that we can't treat the media as like a monolith. You know, we don't all see things exactly the same way. I think there are lots of different voices. And I think there have been people a bit more willing to criticise Lampard for Chelsea's shortcomings during his time and some of the bad results they've had. Me personally, the way I've tried to approach it is just the way I try to approach any Chelsea manager, which is to keep things in context, in proper context. And as I laid out, you know, with the first answer, I think we had to bear in mind the circumstances in which Lampard was operating in last year. They were unique in the history of the Roman Abramovich era. So I don't think you can judge him based on what was expected of other managers, just because he didn't really have the same job to do. Now I think you're judging him by different standards. And so if Chelsea do start to struggle this year, particularly if there is a return to the more systemic problems we've seen on the defensive side and with the general balance of this team, then I don't think there will be anything to shield Lampard from that criticism, certainly from the media. I don't think Chelsea fans will ever turn on him, at least the ones who would regularly go to Stamford Bridge. I've said this before. And that's just because of who he is and what he means to the club and the goodwill that he has. You know, there will be even the fans that might get to a point where they don't think Lampard's the right man anymore. I don't think any of the ones that regularly go to Stamford Bridge would ever go as far as calling for his head just because he means too much to the club. He's arguably the greatest player in the club's history. But from a media perspective, I think that it's been a mixed bag. You can probably make the argument that certain people have been easy on him at times, but overall, I think he's probably going to face a bit more criticism going forward if Chelsea fall short of expectations.
And it's interesting you talk about the shifting in expectation. I think and saying it's in large part due to what we've spent and also how we've performed. I think people are maybe getting a little bit carried away. I think we've probably been guilty of this as well in the last 2 weeks, because the performances have been very convincing against two teams that are maybe in kind of false positions in the table. I think you probably expect both of them, certainly in Sheffield United's case, to be closer to mid-table than the bottom of the table. So I think when you talk about resetting the expectations, do you think that the general consensus, I know it's difficult to sort of speak for the whole of the media, but just kind of, do you think the expectations now for on Lampard are more kind of too challenged for that title this season? I think we're kind of mostly in agreement on this podcast that I think this season it's all about kind of closing that gap as much as we can, and maybe kind of replicating that little horse season that Mourinho's first season back in his second spell, where we got close, but you could see we weren't quite there. I think most Chelsea fans would view that as a great season. But I think, is that kind of the perception in the media, that especially with Liverpool's struggles of injuries and things like that, and obviously the odd nature of the season with so many games, do you think that is kind of where everyone is now in terms of what they expect from Chelsea? And also, do you have any idea of kind of how far the club's expectations have shifted based on what the club has spent, and also how we started to perform the last couple of games?
Well, I think in terms of the title discussion, I mean, that's something that has potentially changed in terms of the landscape since the start of the season, because we didn't know that Virgil van Dijk was going to go down with a serious injury that potentially rules him out for the rest of the year. Joe Gomez has a significant injury now. So Liverpool's defence is significantly depleted. We haven't seen the kind of reaction from Manchester City that maybe you would have expected after a relative down year under Pep Guardiola. And so I think the discussion about what it takes to win the Premier League title has changed from what it was 2-3 months ago. And that has consequences for Chelsea. If you were looking at it before a ball was kicked this year, I think Chelsea internally and most reasonable people looking at it from the outside would have said they should be the most upwardly mobile team in the Big Six. They should be a team that is aspiring to reach the level of Liverpool and City and close that gap. And it was a big gap last year. I think it was something like 33 points to the tally that Liverpool posted. So there's that. But so I think those were the expectations to start the season, to show meaningful progress towards those top two and not to be completely cut adrift and to be closer to those top two than you are to the rest of the league or the next group down of clubs that are battling for top four and Champions League qualification. But that was all resting on the assumption that it would take 95 to 100 points to win the league, which is what we've been running on the last 3 years with the level of excellence that Liverpool and Manchester City have consistently operated at. That doesn't seem to be the case now. You know, the eventual points tally might be significantly less. We might be talking about 85 to 90 points, or maybe 80 to 85, depending on how open this league ends up being. And if that's the case, then you have to say that Chelsea do have the talent in their squad to post a points tally quite close to that. So I think the conversation about Chelsea's title chances has changed, because it doesn't happen in a vacuum. You need to look at the whole league. And I think they do have more chance of mounting a kind of outside, slightly surprise challenge than they did a couple of months ago. Even if you still look at this Chelsea squad and you think even a lot of the players they've brought in are younger. So the profile of this squad is very young. And I think the natural assumption, the logical assumption, is that they're maybe a year or two away.
Yeah, I think we were talking last week. I think this weekend is potentially a big indicator of the title and how and Chelsea's sort of chances within that title race. I think obviously we going to Newcastle probably without Thiago Silva. It looks like possibly without Ben Chilwell. If we can go and pick up 3 points, obviously with Leicester, Tottenham, Liverpool, and City, you know, something's got to give there. And then obviously we play Tottenham the weekend after. But I just wanted to get your opinion. I mean, obviously we've seen with Liverpool things potentially open up because of the injuries to key players. We're all kind of in agreement on here that I think, like you said, the profile of the squad is really young. But I think where we do have experience in some of the new players as well, I think Mendy, despite not being experienced, that experience at the top level, he kind of has the aura, and he, obviously he is pretty experienced playing for Rennes, and he has the aura of an experienced player. Obviously Thiago Silva, and obviously the kind of news that's come out about Lampard tapering Kante's training. I think we kind of all said on the pod last week that our outside title chances or title chances are all very hugely dependent on those three players, how often they can play, and how just how many games we can get out of them. I think if someone said to me now that those players were only going to miss a couple of games each throughout the season, I think we've got enough squad depth to potentially get away with that for the odd game. But it's kind of really stood out immediately how important Mendy and Thiago Silva are to this team and to their title chances. I just wondered what you've made of their impact, and also how crucial they could be in potentially deciding whether we can put together a realistic title charge.
Yeah, I mean, I was asked when the Mendy deal was about to get done, I was asked on a different podcast about which new Chelsea signing could potentially make the biggest impact. And I said Mendy, purely because, without wishing to be brutal, just stating it as it is, Kepa was so bad last season. He was, you know, statistically so much worse than the average goalkeeper would have been, that just getting someone who was solid and fun and could do the fundamentals reliably would be a huge upgrade. I think that's so far what Mendy has proven to be. I mean, it's still very early days and Chelsea have had a relatively favourable run, but the calmness that he projects to that Chelsea defence, the way he commands his area, the way he comes and claims crosses and high balls into the box, I think is a much better fit for the defenders that Chelsea have. And he seems to be solid enough with his feet as well, which I think was one of the more unknowns. I mean, I didn't know anything about him when Chelsea signed him. I'd never seen him play. So it's been a process for me as well of familiarising myself with his game. And I've been very impressed with him so far. He's just very, very calm. And I think all that Lampard wants from his goalkeeper is not to notice him between now and the end of the season. And if Mendy can achieve that, then that is a huge win for Chelsea in that position. Thiago Silva has made a huge impact as well. Again, it's that calmness. It's the kind of elite pedigree that oozes from everything he does, and the way he moves around the pitch, the way he reads situations, the way he dishes out instructions to the people around him. I mean, all of the other defenders in that back four, kind of regular back four that Lampard has settled on in the last few weeks, have all talked publicly about Silva and his influence on them, even though he doesn't know much English at this point. He's made a huge impact, and I think he's filled a void that has been there in that Chelsea defence ever since John Terry left. But the key is, it's unprecedented for a defender this far into his career to come into the Premier League and be a difference maker for a team aspiring to compete at the very top. And so how many minutes can Chelsea get out of him? The fact that he wants to continue playing for Brazil as well complicates things, because he's not going to get those international breaks off. And he's going to have to do a lot of travelling at a time when travelling is particularly problematic for footballers and for everyone. So it's something that Chelsea are going to have to manage. It might be a case of taking him out for the odd game and trying to get through with one game of Rudiger or Christensen or Tomori, if Lampard ever decides he can trust him again. I don't know quite what's happened there. But for the moment, I think you've finally seen an element of stability in that Chelsea defensive structure. And Silva and Mendy have been absolutely fundamental to it.
Yeah, it's really interesting, Liam. You mentioned the defence becoming this this unit that can be relied upon. Obviously, the main pieces you've just outlined, obviously Mendy and Thiago, they allow almost the rest to flourish. And I was really interested to sort of get you on a couple of pieces that you've written recently for The Athletic. You've covered both Ben Chilwell and Reece James, who I think for now is pretty much in the driving seat as the first choice right back, despite how reliable Aspilicueta can be, and maybe he will be in the future for key games, whether Lampard wants to tweak it tactically. But just as a pairing, I think the standard was set by Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson at Liverpool. And I think Chelsea have sort of moved, not level, but like they're getting closer to having that threat from fullback. And both pieces you outline just what each player is bringing. Notably on Chilwell, you talk about how he's one of the most prolific shooters in the team. I think he's fifth so far this season in the Premier League with 1.2 shots per game. Surprisingly, he's actually top of key passes per game at 2.2, just slightly ahead of Ziyech, who we would have definitely expected to be up there. So for him to be in that company is pretty impressive. But how do you see both evolving as Chelsea players in this back four? And given that they're both young fullbacks, that's a pretty exciting prospect, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you were spot on when you were talking about Alexander-Arnold and Robertson being the blueprint for what I think all top teams now are looking for from their fullbacks. And I don't think Chelsea need Chilwell and James to be their primary playmakers in the way that Alexander-Arnold and Robertson often are for Liverpool, at least before they got Thiago. But they are really, really potentially incredible attacking weapons in their own way. And James, I think, has developed more in the way I expected him to, in terms of he seems to have shored up the defensive side of things a bit. Development is not a straight line. He'll have bad days. He's a young guy still learning defensively. But he's looked a little bit more solid and a bit calmer on that side of the ball. And going forward, his crossing is such a weapon. It has been from the moment he started playing in this team. Increasingly, his teammates are beginning to learn when the trigger points are for when they should make their runs and timing when his crosses are going to arrive. And that's something that only happens with time. You know, Alexander-Arnold got 13 assists last year. He didn't get that the first time he was in the Liverpool team. It took time for Mane, Salah, Firmino to get used to when the ball was going to arrive, where it was going to arrive. It took time on the training ground. And I think we're starting to see that with James. And it will only get better. And Chilwell is the one that surprised me more in terms of the way he's playing. And that's why I thought that was an interesting piece to write, because he's much more of a goal threat than I ever expected him to be. I thought he would be a kind of box-to-box crosser, much more conventional fullback style. I mean, in the way that, much more the way that Robertson plays for Liverpool. But instead, he's become a bit of a back post menace. And he's made it clear that that's what Lampard's encouraging him to do. In recent weeks, actually, in the last couple of games, he's often played more advanced than Mason Mount and Timo Werner on that left-hand side. It's really effective. It's actually really effective. He's got superb technique. He's a very good finisher when he gets into those positions. And it's quite difficult for teams to deal with that positional fluidity. But at the same time, both he and James are athletic enough that even when they spend so much of their time going forward, they don't seem to get caught out defensively as much. That will be tested a bit more against teams that have better midfields, better at playing through Chelsea's press, and have faster attackers who can switch the point of emphasis a bit quicker in transition. But for now, I think they've created a real balance to this team and a real additional threat. I mean, that right-hand side in particular with Ziyech and James is just a real problem for other teams. The fact that you've got a guy who can stay in that deep position on the right and swing crosses in with his left. And then if you try to close him down, you've got one of the best crosses of a ball on the overlap in England in James to worry about as well. I think it's very difficult for teams to stop both those things. So that in itself should be a reliable source of attack for Chelsea for quite a long time to come before you even consider everything else they've got going for them in that half of the pitch.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say about Chilwell. I think I was a big fan of Marcus Alonso, and I was a little bit, I think he came in for a lot of harsh criticism for, you know, defensively, some of his issues. But I think Chilwell, to be honest, gives you so much of what you get from Alonso in an attacking sense. I think they're both, like you say, Chilwell surprised me as well. I kind of, having only watched limited minutes when Leicester are playing, I kind of had him down as more of that kind of up and down overlap, deliver a little bit more of a traditional fullback. But yeah, he does operate quite similarly to Alonso, I think. Likes to attack that back post, combine with players and move inside and get into the box. He's also really good in the air, like Alonso. I think he's got a great leap, great timing. But like you touched on, he's got that ability to recover. He's really dynamic, really a great athlete. So we haven't really... We've gained so much in that position, and addressed what was a clear weakness in Alonso, just failing to recover. We all saw that game after the restart at West Ham when it looked like he was running in treacle to get back. Just on Ziyech as well, and you mentioned, I think I heard you on Straight Out Cobham a few weeks ago sort of talking about, yeah, that just being a huge problem for teams. And I think the blueprint is Liverpool in a lot of ways, because I touched on this last week, that it's so much of Liverpool's good play is kind of penning teams in, and just so many, such a variety in their attack. You know, they can play little 1-2s in and around the half spaces of Salah and Mane. But then also a big part of their game is just putting crosses in and being quite direct. I think with us, certainly in the last game, you can just see that it's kind of, I think you may have said this in Straight Out of Cobham, that it's kind of a case of pick your poison, because you're not going to be able to deal with both James and Ziyech. And then inevitably when the ball goes across, it comes out the other side and Chilwell's there to deliver it again. So it's just kind of this relentless approach. But just with Ziyech, I think he's been so impressive in these last few games, and seen that he's sort of continued that on international duty, albeit against probably much lesser opposition. But how important do you think he's going to be going forward? I know we mentioned some of the other experienced players like Thiago Silva and Kante, obviously going to be hugely important how many games we can get out of them. But it just looks to me like Ziyech is going to be so important this season, just because we don't have anyone close to him in the squad who can replace what he does. I think with Pulisic, if Pulisic is out, you've obviously got Werner that can play on the left, or you've got Hudson-Odoi that can play on the left, but there's not really anyone with the profile of Ziyech. And how important do you think he'll be going forward, and how much do you think he can potentially become, you know, one of those sort of untouchable players that goes straight into the team, you know, every single week?
I think he's got a unique skill set in European football, Ziyech. When we did our pieces over the transfer window, as Chelsea were completing these various deals, I did a series of kind of Y Scout deep dives into all these different players, and the thing that I got from watching loads of clips of Ziyech and his goals, his assists, his passes, the thing that I got from looking at Ziyech's key contributions in the attacking third, that he's high risk and high reward in his outlook. And I think that's something that Lampard really wanted for this team. And I think it's something that Chelsea have really lacked, actually, for several years. When you had Hazard on one side and Willian on the other, they're both pass-first players, both excellent at committing their man one-on-one when the opportunity presented itself. But there were so many times when there's an opportunity to try and play a killer ball or to take a shot on, and they wouldn't do it, because they'd go for a slightly safer pass instead, keep the ball and keep the ball moving, or they'd sort of dribble and the momentum, the opportunity would be lost. And Ziyech is so aggressive in that sense. I mean, we haven't really seen, in terms of his shooting, we haven't really seen much of that at Chelsea. He looks like he's been on his best behaviour so far in terms of taking those kind of mad 25-yarders that he was known for Ajax on a regular basis. I mean, he averaged more shots per 90 minutes than Werner, Havertz, Abraham, Pulisic, any of the other attackers in this squad last season in the Eredivisie. He led Ajax in shot attempts. So I think he's reined in that side of his game a little bit, but he still has that ability to aggressively hunt his own shot. And when you combine that with just this really rare technical ability to be able to pick out a really precise target from long range, either with a pass along the floor or a whipped in cross. And he's a really difficult player for, I think, other teams to game plan for. And I think that gives him unique value, particularly in games like Sheffield United at home or Burnley away, games where the other team will sit deep, will compress the space, will challenge you to find a way to break them down, maybe with a single slightly riskier pass. I mean, he is tailor-made for that in a way that a lot of Chelsea's other attackers and a lot of other attackers in the league just aren't. He doesn't need a lot of space to do damage. And I think he's a really good complement for what Chelsea have. I totally agree with what you said, that I don't think there's anyone else in this squad kind of be a decent facsimile for what he offers really off the right. I mean, Havertz, if you put him there, could drift into a lot of the same spaces, but he does different things when he gets there. But I just think Ziyech offers incredible attacking value. I think he's going to be an amazing fantasy football player for people this year because he's all about goals and assists, those kind of final third contributions. And paired with James, I think that's a combination that really looks like it could be able to maximise both of them.
Yeah, I think you're quite right, Liam. That's the main thing I take away from Ziyech's introduction so far. It's exciting, it's fun. I think any Chelsea fan suffering withdrawal symptoms through the international break, just go out and find some highlights of Morocco versus Central African Republic, 4-1 to Morocco. And Ziyech was absolutely on tip-top form. He scored two, he assisted Hakimi with the opener. Interestingly, took the penalty. So maybe if Timo Werner doesn't quite hold that down for the rest of the season, that might be another person willing to step up. But the second goal he scored on in that game was classic Ziyech, but that sort of ball just guided into an area which is going to be really difficult to defend. And if you don't defend it, it might just go straight in. So I think you can see a lot of dangerous scenarios for Chelsea where they don't need to do a lot, but feed him the ball, allow him to sort of just float into an area where it forces the opposition's hand. So really interesting times with both Ziyech on the right, and if Pulisic can stay fit and he can show some of the form that he displayed at the tail end of the sort of truncated season before the just after lockdown finished, I think that's a really exciting prospect, especially when you consider the likes of Havertz settling in, Werner getting more minutes under his belt, and he's been relatively prolific so far, and also Tammy Abraham adding his own qualities to this attack. One player, Liam, that maybe is slightly left out in the cold, and I know he's a player that you're sort of covering and you're trying to find out what's happened to him, is Callum Hudson-Odoi. We know that Bayern Munich made another offer recently, just before the end of the transfer window. It was a loan, it was an option, no obligation to buy, but an option set at around, I think it was 70 million. So a pretty sizable offer, which shows their value of the player despite his struggles recently. How do you see his role over the season evolving? Because obviously you would have expected him to play a little bit more, even though he has played some minutes, because we have Champions League every week, we have Premier League every week. It's two games a week. Perhaps he's been a little bit unlucky with a lack of injuries in those key positions that he can cover. But do you see him biding his time and eventually proving his worth this season?
Well, I wrote a piece a week or two ago about Hudson-Odoi's situation, and the conversations that I had around that really cemented what I was already thinking, which was that this is quite a worrying situation for him now. And you can make the argument that his best window to make a big leap forward for Chelsea this season has already closed, because at the start of the year, he was the only fit winger in the squad. Pulisic was out, Ziyech got injured in pre-season, Werner was being used through the middle, and it looked like the way was clear for him to get an opportunity in the opening weeks and really kick on. And that didn't happen largely because Lampard wanted to, he wasn't playing for 4-3-3 so much. He was kind of shifting between different formations. He was using Mason Mount wide a lot. He was using Kai Havertz wide a little bit. And he was still trying to find the broader balance of the team. But it was Hudson-Odoi that kind of paid the price for that. And he didn't get as many minutes, as many meaningful minutes in those first few weeks of the season when the door was open for him. Maybe he should have done, but certainly I think that he probably hoped he would. And now you look at it, and Ziyech has come in and look, already looks pretty indispensable to the way Chelsea want to play. Pulisic, if he can regain the kind of form that he showed last year, is an absolute pillar of what Chelsea are building, because he was Chelsea's best attacking player last season. Havertz and Werner and Abraham, I think, has responded excellently to the challenge of Werner. He's been really good whenever he's played. So there's just so much competition now. And Mason Mount has shifted more into central midfield, but Lampard has already shown it doesn't matter where he puts Mount in the team. He just wants him in the team for the qualities that he brings and the intensity and the pressing and the way he sets the tone. So this is all bad news for Hudson-Odoi in terms of his development. And I think we know history tells us that the people around him are aggressive when it comes to prioritising his development and his future. That's why I think those discussions with Bayern Munich resurfaced towards the end of the window. Chelsea were in a very different position in those conversations than they were the last time Bayern came calling, because Hudson-Odoi signed a new contract. He's contracted till 2024. Chelsea don't have to do anything now. They have all the power, and they exercise that right. They said, okay, 70 million is a big number, even if it's only an option, but we want to keep you, and we can keep you now because you're under contract. But if this situation continues and he remains bottom of the wing pecking order, history tells us that I think these conversations will come up again. If not in January, then the end of the season, and it will continue to be a running theme, because Hudson-Odoi is watching a lot of his peers at youth level, notably players like Jadon Sancho, but you know, like Phil Foden, people like that. They're all in the England squad, and he's with the under-21s still. He's the headline name in the under-21s, but on talent, he should really be in the England squad at this point in time. And so I think he, you know, everything I've heard about Hudson-Odoi suggests that he's keeping his head down. He's trying to work hard and convince Lampard that he's ready to play. And he is getting some minutes. You know, it's not fair to say he's just not playing. He's coming off the bench quite a bit, played against Krasnodar. But he's more peripheral than I think a lot of his peers who are in the England squad right now. He's a lot more peripheral at club level than I think he would like to be at this point in time. And certainly I think if he'd gone to Bayern Munich, he probably would be getting more minutes than he is right now, despite the great wingers they have. So it's a worrying situation for him. And I think as long as it stays this way, I can't see the speculation about his future going away.
Yeah, definitely. It's an interesting time, given we're only, 6 weeks or so away from that January transfer window. Could you envisage a situation where he does leave in January? And if it doesn't quite work out, obviously, and he has to move on, what sort of a profile of player do you think Chelsea might be looking to acquire? I mean, we've seen in the last window that a couple of teams, United and Liverpool, seemingly linked with Ismail Assar. That would be a young winger who could maybe blossom into a starter. Somebody else that maybe is a bit older in their prime that could maybe come in a bit more experienced, like a Bernardeschi at Juventus seems to be available. They seem to be moving him on. So I don't know whether it might be more of a stopgap type of player. Obviously, Sarr at Watford would cost considerably more. Those sort of players, is there another profile that you could see that might be a better fit for the dynamic of the squad than the likes of Callum Hudson-Odoi, who obviously is very young and needs minutes? So maybe given the quality that we've seen from Ziyech, Pulisic, maybe Havertz and Mount can shift wide, obviously, too. Is it just the wrong dynamic at the moment for Callum Hudson-Odoi? And if he does leave, how do you see them addressing that position?
Well, I think the first thing is, if you talk to anyone at Chelsea, they'll insist that Hudson-Odoi is a key part of their future planning. You know, they signed him to a massive contract, a massive long-term deal, and they see that as kind of testament to their belief in him, that he can fulfill his potential. And I think that the flip side of that is there has always been a wariness at Chelsea of letting a player like Hudson-Odoi leave, regardless of the fee you get, because he, in terms of talent and upside, he's probably the best prospect to come out of this Chelsea academy. And I include Mount, Abraham, James, all of those in that. He's, I think Hudson-Odoi has the highest upside. He's got like Jadon Sancho level potential. I mean, when they were both at youth level, they were regarded as kind of neck and neck. If anything, Hudson-Odoi might have been slightly ahead of Sancho. So that's the wariness. It would be like Kevin De Bruyne, but even worse, because it's a player your academy produced. You know, you start an academy and fund an academy to produce a player like Callum Hudson-Odoi. And when you do, you don't really want to have to sell him. But having said that, you know, the situation is complicated for all the reasons we've discussed. So if he were to leave, I would be surprised if it happened in January, because I just think the market is quite difficult. Unless Bayern came back with like guaranteed money that was just eye-popping, then I don't see any club maybe coming in with anything that makes Chelsea really think about it. And time is on their side in terms of the contract. But in terms of other wingers that Chelsea could maybe bring in, it's hard for me to talk about names because I don't know. I'm not a scout. I don't watch enough leagues outside the Premier League regularly enough to know these guys' games intimately. But I think in terms of skill set and profile, it probably would be good to get another left footer who plays off the right. Whether that guy's a bit younger than Ziyech and maybe fits more easily into a backup role on that side, maybe slightly older, but clearly more of a squad player, I'm not sure. But positionally and skill set wise, another left footer that plays off the right would probably be the best complement for what Chelsea already have.
Yeah, I think it's going to be difficult for Callum in large part. You guys both touched on it. I think as long as Werner looks like he's not really a viable option through the middle, just because I think he's still acclimatizing to the physical nature of the league. We saw he's really struggled holding the ball up, linking the play, dealing with the kind of just that split second, less time he has on the ball. I think so. That's, I think, a big reason as to why he's moved wide. And we've seen Tammy come in, who's just so Premier League adjusted, so at ease at this level as a centre forward now. I think he's just improved dramatically in all those things I just spoke about, kind of holding the ball up, link up play. So as long as Werner's still acclimatising, and obviously while he's acclimatising in that wide position, he's scoring a lot of goals. There's just, like you say, there's not really a route into the team for Callum. Potentially as a different kind of option on the right, going on the outside and delivering, but I still don't think that's his best role. And also, like we mentioned, Ziyech is becoming such an important player, it looks like, that it's going to be difficult to get any opportunities on that right-hand side anyway. Just going back to, obviously, you briefly mentioned Mason Mount there, who I think it's looking like he's sort of not just a favourite of Lampard's. We've seen Frank kind of almost shoehorn him into the team at the start of the season. But now, for me, he's playing in his best role, sort of as an 8/10 in that 4-3-3. We've seen him, for Chelsea anyway, kind of really drop in deep sometimes alongside Kante and progress the ball really well from deep. And then for England, we even saw him play in the midfield too against Ireland and look very comfortable. I just wondered what you made, obviously coming off the back of England, and I just wondered what you made of the kind of perception of Mount. It's strange for us. I think we're all huge admirers of him on this podcast, and we can clearly see why he gets picked so consistently for club and country. It seems strange to me, some of the Chelsea fans, I don't know whether it's kind of an online thing. It seems to be a little bit of a split amongst the Chelsea fans of Mason Mount, which is incredible when you consider that he's an academy product who's been with the club since he was 7 or 8, I think. And that seems to sort of extend to England as well, and this sort of strange debate that's developed between him and Grealish. I was quite pleased to see Grealish's interview after the game. Sort of, I think he was as perplexed by it as kind of as we are, and some Chelsea fans are, because they're not competing for the same position. I just wonder what you made of that kind of debate, and how it's emerged, and why it's emerged, and whether it's a bit of a media creation or whether it's kind of in response to some of Southgate's sort of bizarre answers that he gave to Grealish in the previous international break, where he was sort of reluctant to answer any questions on him. I just wonder what you made of that debate and Mason Mount in general as a player and that this kind of Mount Grealish thing that seems to have strangely emerged out of something, but I can't quite put my finger on how it's come about, really.
Well, I feel like for club and country, Mount has suffered in comparison with quote unquote sexier players. Chelsea, there are no shortage of exotic new signings in attacking midfield that he's competing with, or wingers that maybe people are more excited about. And Grealish, I can completely understand the excitement around Grealish. He might be the best English player to watch right now. I'd say Sancho would be up there if Southgate ever played him as well. But I feel sorry for Mount in that respect, because I think at Chelsea level, he has become Lampard's Jorginho. He has become to Lampard what Jorginho was to Sarri, which is the guy that they see as integral for symbolising and underpinning the principles of the entire team, but also the focal point of the culture war, because everything in football seems to be, well, everything in human conversation now seems to devolve into a culture war, but it's bled into football as well. And I think it's a real shame for Mount, because of that he's a very good footballer. He's an extremely likable guy. Like, there's nothing to dislike about Mason Mount personally. And as he said, he's an academy boy. He's come through the ranks at Chelsea, has supported Chelsea the whole time, and has only ever dreamed of playing for the club. Now, there are some Chelsea fans, there are some fans of all clubs that don't really care about that. You know, they don't care if an academy prospect is playing for the team or if someone else comes in on big money and plays. They just want to see the team win and they want to see good players playing. And that's entirely valid. You know, there are many, many ways of supporting a team, and there isn't a wrong way, I don't think. But I do think it's been incredibly unfair, the kind of criticism that Mount has had to shoulder, purely for the fact that managers like him and like playing him. And it's easy to see why, it should be easy to see why managers like him. He's very good technically. I think this is sometimes underrated. He's got exceptional technique. His ball control in tight spaces and his passing are excellent. And his interpretation of space, they're all really, really good. You can see all of the things that he's honed in Chelsea's academy. And on top of that, he works really hard. He works incredibly hard. He's almost always the hardest working player on his team. And he leads the press, which is so important in modern football. If you've got a player who you can rely upon to do that, the stats back it up. If you look at Chelsea's pressing stats, he is top in terms of volume and success in the way that he pressures opponents. You can question his decision making. You know, he probably shoots too much at times. He gets a bit of tunnel vision in the final third. But that's not, entirely unexpected for a young player who's still developing. And I just think he's become really, really good really early for Chelsea. He's got a really good mentality, which means I think he's only going to get better. And in recent weeks, we've seen him find his best role, which is that number eight position. If you're going to have a go at Mount for playing on the wing, I think you're doing something wrong. He's not choosing to be played on the wing. He knows, by the way, if you talk to people around Mount, he knows that his best position is the number eight. He's always thought that, but he plays where he's told. And I just think in recent weeks with Chelsea, we've seen Lampard give him an opportunity to play in his best position, and he's shown why it's his best position. I think he's been one of Chelsea's best players. He's controlled the tempo, he's balanced things. He was the de facto left back in possession against Sheffield United while Ben Chilwell was bombing forward. And he does all the little things that make players around him better. So I think he's a key player for Chelsea and for England moving forward. Doesn't have to come at the expense of Jack Grealish. That's down to the manager, as is virtually everything else that Mount gets criticised for.
Yeah, that's it's quite well said. I do think it's bizarre, the quote-unquote rivalry between the two. I think it shines a light more on Southgate's reluctance or bit of trepidation in terms of the system, whether he's unwilling to play Grealish in that free expansive role that he does so well for Aston Villa. So yeah, really interesting insight, Liam, on Mount and what he brings for both club and country. Thanks so much again for your time today, Liam. It's been really good. Final point I really wanted to get your take on is also linked to England, actually. It's on Tomori, and you've mentioned it before. You said you weren't quite sure what's happened. I mean, we go back to the squad dynamic, and it was a bit of a concern moving into the season that there were five centre-backs. And I think Frank's been lucky enough that Rudiger is sort of, he's come back round. He's shown a good attitude, I think, to be brought back in, because if he was relegated to fifth choice and Tomori was still getting time, I think that could have festered and been a slight issue. But it turns out that Tomori is now fifth choice, more or less, and is not getting the minutes that he needs or potentially deserves, because I think he has done very well whenever he's been called upon. England obviously struggling at the back. They're playing three at the back now, and it seems to compromise everything else that England can or do well as such, because they have such vast options going forward. So to protect what England are vulnerable, their vulnerability, Southgate is now sort of limiting what we can do going forward. So we obviously have Maguire struggling. We have Joe Gomez's big injury. And then you've got a player like Tomori, who is athletic. He's very fast. He can cover around the back of his fullback. We know he's good on the ball, having played for Lampard's Chelsea and done so well at Derby too. But he's never going to get in if he doesn't get the minutes. And I think from January, maybe it's probably too late for the Euros, if you think of a typical international manager who likes to stabilise his squad and bring that club element. And yeah, it's just a bit of a shame, I think, that he has lacked the opportunities, because I think had he opted for that move, I think it was to West Ham, they were looking for a loan move, and it seemed like Tomori wasn't too keen on that. Maybe he'd be in a much stronger position now. Do you think there's some regret there? And also, how do you see his future at Chelsea?
Well, I think at the time, the sense we got, and my colleague Simon Johnson led our reporting on the whole Tomori situation, I think the sense we got was that he wasn't convinced enough that he would be a regular starter at West Ham, that David Moyes maybe didn't go far enough in terms of assuring him that he would be a regular name on that team sheet. And it wasn't quite clear enough whether West Ham were looking for a starting centre-back or squad cover. And Tomori concluded he was probably more likely to be the latter. And when it becomes that situation in the final hours of the window, squad cover at Chelsea or squad cover at West Ham, he decided to be squad cover at Chelsea. It was a complicated one for Lampard because, you know, I think he took quite a bold stand in the last transfer window. It would have been a lot easier for him politically to let Tomori go out on loan to Everton, which was the deal that was on the table a lot earlier, as it was before last season, and keep Rudiger. But Lampard was quite forceful in discussions in saying that he saw Rudiger as more expendable. And that politically was a lot more difficult at Chelsea because Rudiger's on much bigger money. He's an established senior player. And there wasn't really a market for him either, aside from Jose Mourinho mischievously wanting to take him across London on loan. So there wasn't a workable option in that sense. It's all just added up to a situation now where Tomori is kind of buried in this squad. And it's not good news for him. It's not good news for England for all the reasons you said. I mean, we know Southgate likes him because he wasn't slow in calling him up. As soon as he started playing for Chelsea, it was very, very hot on the heels of his run in the team, I think, that Southgate involved him at England level, gave him his first caps. And I think he would like to play him now, particularly with Joe Gomez out for the foreseeable. I would imagine, I mean, I would be quite surprised the current situation persists if one of he and Andreas Christensen, who's the other guy that we haven't talked about much, I'd be very surprised if at least one of them isn't gone from Chelsea by the end of January, just because neither of them are getting the minutes that they want. And they're both young centre-backs that need to play to develop. And it's possible that maybe both of them go, because Azpilicueta can play at centre-back as well. We'll have to see. There's a long way to go until January still, and a lot of football to be played. And of course, Thiago Silva, there's always the live question about how fit he can stay. And Rudiger had his injuries last year, so that things could change. But the way things are right now, Tomori's in an awkward spot, and he does need to, I think, go somewhere else to play regularly in the Premier League. The good news is that we have very recent evidence to suggest that there will be plenty of interest in him, but he's essentially wasted half a season, which is not good for him. It's not good for Chelsea either, because they want Tomori to develop, and not good for England.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting situation, isn't it, to see how it develops. I think there's still plenty of games to come, but it does look pretty bleak, to put it bluntly, for both Tomori and Christensen. Like you said, I think Aspilicueta's future certainly lends itself to transitioning towards a centre-back. So yeah, that'll be interesting to follow, Liam. Thanks so much for your time today. We know we can follow you on Twitter at Liam_Toomey if you don't already. I'm sure everybody does. Obviously on the Athletics podcast network, Straight Out of Cobham, a must listen. Anything else to plug? Any pieces coming up by the end of the week that we should look out for?
The one thing I've got up on site at the moment is a big piece on the culture of Chelsea women. So if people are interested in that, it's a very unique culture. They've built something very special there. So that's worth the read. I don't know if some people may not have noticed, but it no longer seems to be quite as edge of your seat every time Chelsea concede a corner these days. So I'm going to take a closer look at that and try to explain how things have improved.
Brilliant. Well, we'll look out for that. And thanks so much for coming on and sharing a bit of your time and having a good chat about the Blues. And yeah, we look forward to the weekend, as Will has pointed out, there's some big games this weekend, and Chelsea can sort of take a big step, and we'll see how this potential title race unfolds. And you can follow the podcast at Palpable Pod, and we will be back next week reviewing the Newcastle game and seeing just where Chelsea are. Thank you for listening.